فيه من السفر من الصوت You're neither. You're an errand boy sent by grocery clerks to collect the bill.
To do is bide your time. The system is eating its tail every day. You don't have to go out, run out there and try to assist it. It's doing a damn good job itself. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in north central Indiana on an overcast day. We may get some rain today. It's running in the high 70s, some humidity. And boy, these little bugs that get on you and suck your blood are all around today. They're all around. I've caught two of them on my leg. I got to get rid of my short pants and go back to long pants to protect myself from these little boogers. We're still here at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show, and thank all you people who've got your donations in. And if you haven't got them in for this month of June, you better do it pretty quick. Yeah, and we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Send your snail mail to that box. We get quite a bit of mail. We get quite a bit of prisoner mail, and we try to send something out to each and every one that contacts us, whether it be on race, however most of the prisons are carefully on guard to protect the prisoners from white literature, which is a joke. That just makes them more racist, yeah. And I'm sending a lot of anti-religious stuff in there, too, because it's my opinion. If you don't get your mind right about religion, it's going to be very difficult to operate in the years to come. Because we're going to be living probably in a Mad Max world. And if you're stuck on mythological entities like the baby Jesus and things like that, and think that somehow the great God in the sky is going to protect you and save you, and if you get killed, go to heaven, it's going to slow you down, baby. So get your mind right. Might makes right. For all you people out there still searching for the baby Jesus, so if you find him, bring him over here. I want to talk to him. I got some important questions. Well, I got a note from one of our good supporters here. Hey, TT. Eric Rudolph wrote an autobiography called Between the Lines of Drift and Memoirs of a Militant, unquote. It's on his webpage, his homepage, and it's over 250 pages. He discusses his operations, the problems he encountered and overcame, and so on. Very interesting. Please send him some money. Okay, we'll get him a postal money order out in the next couple of days. I'll have to get his prison registry address first, and then we'll do it. We'll do that. One of my contacts that sends me stuff once in a while has sent me a statement here, an article, allegedly written by Dylan Storm Roof, the South Carolina assassin. The Last Rhodesian is the name of it, supposedly put out on June 17th. I was not raised in a racist home or environment. Well, neither was I. Living in the South, almost every white person has a small amount of racial awareness, simply because of the numbers of Negroes in this part of the country. But it is a superficial awareness. Growing up in school, the white and black kids would make racial jokes towards each other. But all they were jokes. Me and white friends would sometimes watch things and would make us think that blacks are the real racists, and other elementary thoughts like this. But there was no real understanding behind it. The event that truly awakened me was the Trayvon Martin case. I kept hearing and seeing his name, and eventually I decided to look him up. I read the Wikipedia article right away, and I was unable to understand what the big deal was. It was obvious that Zimmerman was in the right. But more importantly, this prompted me to type in the words black on white crime into Google. I've never been the same since that day. The first website I came to was of the Council of Conservative Citizens. There were pages upon pages of these brutal black-on-white murders. I was in disbelief. At this moment, I realized that something was very wrong. How could the news be blowing up the Trayvon Martin case while hundreds of these black-on-white murders got ignored? From this point, I researched deeper and found out what was happening in Europe. I saw the same things were happening in England and France and in all the other Western European countries. Again, I found myself in disbelief. As an American, we are taught to accept living in the melting pot, and black and other minorities have just as much right to be here as we do, since we're all immigrants. Hold it. But Europe is the homeland of the white race and white people. And in many cases, the situation is even worse there. From here, I found out about the Jewish problem and other issues facing our race. And I can say today that I am completely racially aware. Blacks. I think it is fitting to start off with the group I have the most real life experience with, and the group that is the biggest problem for Americans. Niggers are stupid and violent. At the same time, they have the capacity to be very slick. Black people view everything through a racial lens. That's what racial awareness is. It's viewing everything that happens through a racial lens. They are always thinking about the fact that they are black. This is part of the reason they get offended so easily and think that something are intended to be racist towards them, even when a white person wouldn't be thinking about race at all. The other reason is the Jewish agitation of the black race. Black people are racially aware almost from birth, but white people, on the average, don't think about race in their daily lives. And this is our problem. We need to and have to. Say you were a witness to a dog being beaten by a man. You are almost surely going to feel very sorry for that dog. But then, say you were to witness a dog biting a man, you will most likely not feel the same pity you felt for the dog for the man. Why? Because dogs are lower than men. This same analogy applies to black and white relations. Even today, blacks are subconsciously viewed by white people as lower beings. They are held to a lower standard in general. This is why they are able to get away with things like obnoxious behavior in the public, because it is expected of them. Modern history classes instill a subconscious white superiority complex in whites and an inferiority complex in blacks. This white superiority complex that comes from learning of how we dominated other peoples is also part of the problem I have just mentioned. But of course, I don't deny that we are in fact superior. I wish with a passion that niggers were treated terribly throughout history by whites, that every white person had an ancestor who owned slaves, that segregation was an evil and oppressive institution, and so on. Because if it was all true, it would make it so much easier for me to accept our current situation. But it isn't true. None of it is. We're told to accept what is happening to us because the ancestors' wrongdoing. But it is all based on historical lies, exaggerations, and myths. I have tried endlessly to think of reasons we deserve this, and I've only come back more irritated because there are no reasons. Only a fourth to a third of the people in the South owned even one slave. Yet every white person is treated as if they had a slave-owning ancestor. This applies to in states where slavery never existed, as well as people whose families immigrated after slavery was abolished. I've read hundreds of slave narratives from my state, and almost all of them were positive. One sticks out of my mind, where an old ex-slave recounted how the day his mistress died was one of the saddest days in his life. And in many of these narratives, the slaves told of how their masters didn't even allow whipping on the plantation. Segregation was not a bad thing. It was a defensive measure. Segregation did not exist to hold back Negroes. It existed to protect us from Negroes. And I mean that in multiple ways. Not only did it protect us from having to interact with them and from being physically harmed by them, but it protected us from being brought down to their level. Integration has done nothing but bring whites down to the level of brute animals. The best example of this is obviously our school system. Now, white parents are forced to move to the suburbs to send their children to good schools. But what constitutes a good school? The fact is that how good a school is considered directly responds to how white it is. I hate with a passion the whole idea of the suburbs. To me, it represents nothing but scared white people running. Running because they are too weak, scared, and brainwashed to fight. Why should we have to flee the cities we created for the security of the suburbs? Why are the suburbs secure in the first place? Because they are white. The pathetic part is that these white people don't even admit to themselves why they are moving. They tell themselves it's for better schools or simply to live in a nicer neighborhood. But it is honestly just a way to escape niggers and other minorities. But what about the white people that are left behind? What about the white children who, because of school zoning laws, are forced to go to a school that is 90% white, or black, I mean? Do you really think that that white kid will be able to go one day without being picked on for being white or called a white boy? And who is fighting for him? Who is fighting for those white people forced by economic circumstances to live amongst Negroes? No one, but someone has to. Here I would also like to touch on the idea of the Northwest Imperative Front. I think this idea is beyond stupid. Why should I, for example, give up the beauty and history of my state to go to the Northwest? To me, the whole idea just parallels the concept of white people running to the suburbs. The whole idea is pathetic and just another way to run from the problem without facing it. Some people feel as though the South is beyond saving, that we have too many blacks here. To this I say, look at history. The South had a higher ratio of blacks when we were holding them as slaves. Look at South Africa and how such a small minority held the black in apartheid for years and years. Speaking of South Africa, if anyone thinks that think will eventually just change for the better, consider how in South Africa they have affirmative action for the black population that makes up 80% of the population. It is far from being too late for America or Europe. I believe that even if we made up only 30% of the population, we could take it back completely. But by no means should we await any longer to take drastic action. anyone who thinks the white and black people look as different as we do on the outside but are somehow magically the same on the inside is delusional. How could their faces, skin, hair, body structure, and all be different, but their brains be exactly the same? This is nonsense. We are led to believe. Negroes have lower IQs, lower impulse control, and higher testosterone levels in general. These three things alone are a recipe for violent behavior. If a scientist publishes a paper on differences between the races in Western Europe or Americans, he can expect to lose his job. There are personality traits within human families and within different breeds of cats or dogs, so why not within races? A horse and a donkey can breed and make a mule, but they're all still two completely different animals. And of course, Tommy says the offspring is sterile, too. Just because we can breed with other races doesn't make us the same. In a modern history class, it is always emphasized that when talking about bad things whites have done in history, they were white, but when we learn about the numerous, almost countless, wonderful things whites have done, it is never pointed out that these people were white. Yet, when we learn about anything important done by black person in history, it is always pointed out repeatedly that they were black. For example, when we learn about how George Washington Carver was the first nigger smart enough to open a peanut. On another subject, I want to say this. Many white people feel as though they don't have a unique culture. The reason for this is that white culture is world culture. I don't mean that our culture is made up of other cultures. I mean that our culture has been adopted by everyone in the world. This makes us feel as though our culture isn't special or unique. Say, for example, that every businessman in the world wore a kimono, that every skyscraper was in the shape of a pagoda, that every door was a sliding one, and that everyone ate every meal with chopsticks. This would probably make a Japanese man feel as though he had no unique traditional culture. I have noticed a great disdain for race mixing white women within the white nationalist movement, bordering on insanity. These women are victims, and they can be saved. Next, I talk about Jews. Unlike many white nationalists, I am of the opinion that a majority of Americans and Jewish European Jews are white. In my opinion, the issues with these Jews is not their blood, but their identity. I think that if we could somehow destroy the Jewish identity, then they wouldn't cause much of a problem. The problem is that Jews look white, and in many cases are white, yet they see themselves as minorities. Just like niggers, most Jews are always thinking about the fact that they're Jewish. The other issue is that they network. If we could somehow turn every Jew blue for 24 hours, I think there would be a mass awakening because people would be able to see plainly what is going on. I don't pretend to understand why Jews do what they do. They're an enigma. Hispanics are obviously a huge problem for Americans. But there are good Hispanics and bad Hispanics. Well, there's white Hispanics and non-white mestizos. I remember while watching Hispanic television stations, the shows and even the commercials were more white than our own. They have respect for the white beauty, and a good portion of the Hispanics are white. It is a well-known fact that the white Hispanics make up the elite of most Hispanic countries. There is good white blood worth saving in Uruguay, Argentina, Chile, and even Brazil. But there still are enemies, East Asians. I have great respect for the East Asian races. Even if we were to go extinct, they would carry on something. They are by nature very racist and could be great allies of the white race. I'm not opposed at all to allies with the Northeast Asian races. Patriotism. I hate the sight of the American flag. Modern American patriotism is an absolute joke. People pretending like they have something to be proud of while white people are being murdered daily in the streets. Many veterans believe we owe them something for protecting our way of life, unquote, or protecting our freedom, unquote. But I'm not sure what way of life they're talking about. How about we protect the white race and stop fighting for the Jews? I will say this, though, I myself would have rather lived in 1940s American than Nazi Germany, and no, this is not ignorance speaking, it is just my opinion. So I don't blame the veterans of any wars up until and after Vietnam, because at least they had an American to be proud of and fight for. An explanation, to take a saying from the film, quote, "I see all this stuff going on and I don't see anyone doing anything about it and it pisses me off," unquote. To take a saying from my favorite film, quote, "Even if my life is worth less than a speck of dirt, I want to use it for the good of society," unquote. I have no choice. I'm not in position to alone go into the ghetto and fight. I chose Charleston because it's the most historic city in my state, and at one time had the highest ratio of blacks to whites in the country. We have no skinheads, no real KKK, no one doing anything but talking on the internet. Well, someone has to have the bravery to take it to the real world. I guess that has to be me. Unfortunately, at the time of writing, I'm in a great hurry, and some of my best thoughts, actually many of them, have been left out and lost forever. But I believe enough great white minds are out there already. Please forgive any typos. I didn't have time to check it. Okay, boys and girls, that appears to be one of the last, if not the last, article that Dylan Storm Roof put out, called "The Last Rhodesian." Now you can go up to http://lastr, in other words, lastrhodesian.com/data/documents/RTF88.txt. Now I'm going to take their word for it that this is actually what he put out, and whoever put it out said the right things. And if Dylan Storm Roof put this out, then I agree with him 100% on what he put out. It's too bad he had to throw his life away on this nine Negro thing in South Carolina. But there's going to be a lot more of that stuff as time goes on both sides of the fence, until gradually there's enough guerrilla armies in this country to start the ball really rolling. So anyhow, what do you think? If you want a copy of this, I'll photocopy it for you, send to you, just send me a self-addressed, maybe two-stamped envelope, and I'll send you a copy. Based on what he has said, and if he did say this, then I support Roof. I'm not going to pass any judgment on any white man at this time in history based on what they have done, as long as it has something to do with the preservation of the white race. And if other people don't like that, they want to call me names, I don't give a damn. Remember what Morris D. said, that Tom Metzger is the most dangerous man in America. I have a hard time believing that, but I would hope it's true. At least my ideas are very dangerous. A lot of people don't know one of the biggest problems the South had in the Civil War. Well, they had some real good things going for them. They had a corner on the market for saltpeter, which was a main ingredient for gunpowder, and the North didn't have jack. The North was panic-stricken to get saltpeter in from Britain. Without it, they couldn't even have a war. So guess what? They go to the super elite again, the DuPont people here in the United States. Whenever government gets its ass in a jam, they go to the upper classes, I don't call them an upper class, really, they're bandit class. And DuPont goes over to England, and he can undercover for his particular operations in the United States, can order a lot of saltpeter without being looked upon too much. So he ordered millions of pounds or tons of saltpeter, and just about the time he was to ship to the States, the United States Navy stopped a ship on the high seas and took off two ambassadors from the Confederacy that were on their way to England. And England then stopped all shipments to the United States immediately. And so finally, the only way that they could get this saltpeter released was for the United States officially from the president to apologize to the British, which he did. And that let the saltpeter go that was needed in the construction of armaments, gunpowder, that led to the winning of the Civil War. So that's something to remember about the ruling class. They can never be trusted. That's too bad tactically. If the South would have had agents in London keeping an eye on things, they could have waylaid DuPont, took him out, which would have made the North totally almost defenseless because of their inability to manufacture gunpowder. Remember, to go to war, it means more than having a closet full of guns with a few boxes of ammo. You got to have backup, even a guerrilla force, either the ability to take it away from the people who have it, the things you need, or you have to have a way of manufacturing it. And rarely does a guerrilla army starting out have that ability without being detected. So if you're going to wage war against the system, you've got to take it from the system first. Yeah, I saw that in a movie one time. I saw a very interesting movie last night on Netflix. It was about the final throes, the final days of the German occupation of Paris. And, of course, by this time, things are pretty much lost to the Third Reich. Hitler's totally sick. He's shaking like a leaf. He's all screwed up. And he's on Dr. Morell's drugs and meth and everything else. And, of course, he says, destroy Paris. And the general in charge of the Paris situation sets out to follow the orders. And they mine all the main bridges. They mine the Eiffel Tower and put charges all over Paris to bring the whole damn town down. And then there's a man who is a sort of like a civilian ambassador, starts talking to the general, and the whole movie is about this discourse between this person and the general, finally convincing the general, as the Allies or as American troops are invading the city, not to blow the charges, which would have been pretty bad for Paris because it would have been thousands of people die. And, of course, all the landmarks and everything would have been destroyed. So he took it upon himself at pain of being executed to stop it, a humanitarian thing. And he lived to tell about it, and then he lived to 1955, I believe, and was seen as the savior of Paris. Interesting story. Well, I'll tell you, I'm looking at a stack of mail over here that built up while I was running around over in Hebland, and I got so damn much mail here, it's going to take me a lot of days to respond. So if you sent me a letter lately, don't expect for a quick answer. If you email me, you'll get an answer much faster. Oh, the other thing about one of the problems the South had, fighting the Civil War, which was doomed from the start, the best they could have got was a negotiated peace, was the fact that the War of 1845, the revolt of 1845, had just concluded in Europe, which was a very vicious war. And the winners were out to get people who fought in that war against the system. So thousands and thousands of these Europeans, all from all the countries of Europe and Russia and every place, who were involved in that uprising, the War of 1845, were streaming through Ellis Island, and they left the gates wide open because the Union needed troops, and this was where they're going to get them, which they did, thousands and thousands of troops. The Confederacy only had so many troops to choose from. They were outnumbered 7-1. And every month, thousands more were pouring in from Europe and were glad to take on the uniform of the North just to get a citizenship. So that's another reason the South was doomed to lose. The South, when I'm talking about the South, I'm talking about the Southern oligarchs, the big plantation owners that ran the show. The poor people, the poor white population of the South would not win no matter which way it went. Only the rich and famous were going to win either way. Now, this notice goes out to you or friends of yours, whoever, who keep quite a bit of cash in the banks. If you have money in a U.S. bank account, beware. When the banks crash, against your money will be in Category 8. In other words, you'll lose everything that you have in the insolvent bank. Yep. If claims are made against a firm, they will be paid in this order. 1. Administrative costs. 2. The government. 3. Wages, salaries, or commissions of employees. 4. Contributions to employee benefit plans. 5. Any other general or senior liability of the company. Any junior obligation. Salaries of executives and directors of the company. And obligations to shareholders, members, and general partners and other equity holders. So beware, if you've got large amounts of money in these banks, this is from the Dodd-Frank Title II, Section 209B piece of law. If you've got a lot of money, and that doesn't necessarily mean millions in banks, you better be very careful. I surely wouldn't keep much money in any bank nowadays, because this crash could happen any minute. Or it may go on for years. But one thing is going to happen. These bubbles are going to burst. So beware. You can put your money in old silver, pre-1964 silver. You can put your money into jewelry. You can put your money, if you can find diamonds, you can find... There's all kinds of things that people use when the economy goes to hell. Sort of take a tip from the Europeans. Even the Jews, when they're trying to flee and get out of there, they sew diamonds into their coats and all kinds of stuff like that. Stuff that's easily transportable that can be converted to food or money. So remember that. Know how to do all this stuff, because when it comes, and if it comes, it'll be too late. Anybody that tells you they know exactly when these crashes are going to happen, they don't. But you can see the handwriting on the wall, that's for sure. Well, I see the native sons have hit Indonesia pretty hard this morning. To take out 100 of them, maybe 30 or 40, I guess. And also, we've got something cooking in France right now. Somebody's shooting up something or doing something. I didn't get the details yet. How about the neocons? Remember them? George Bush and Cheney and their boys? Project New America? Project New America bullshit. Well, here we go. Neocons urge embrace of Al-Qaeda. Doesn't that sound like a Cheney deal? The latest neocon gambit is to build support for regime change in Syria by downplaying the evils of the Al-Qaeda. Now, what was the need to have regime change in Syria? I mean, those countries are all run by dictatorship types. What do they expect? They want democracy? We don't even have it in this country. Rebranding is as much as some sort of a moderate terrorist force whose Syrian affiliate is acceptable to Israel. Oh, we should care about that and supported by Saudi Arabia. But this audacious argument ignores reality. Well, I'm going to tell you something. Israel's playing Russian roulette all the time. And I could see it in the little time I was in Israel and adding two and two together and coming up with four. And if Israel plays around very much, they're going to get their fingers burnt bad. Just 9 days after the fall of the World Trade Center, George W. Bush announced that he was imposing a radical new policy on virtually the entire globe. Quote, every nation in every region now has a decision to make, says George Bush. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists. From this day forward, any nation that continues to harbor or support terrorism will be regarded by the United States as a hostile regime, unquote. Well, of course, Bush did his best to create hostile regimes. I mean, everything he did, everything Cheney, his boss, told him to do, led to reaction. Reaction, you know? Reaction's a bitch. Payback's a bitch. Even 9/11 had to do a lot with payback. Just 9 days after the fall of the world, as dramatic as the statement was, just about every phrase was open to question in one form or another. It sure was. But rather than launching into a long, vigorous debate about the meaning of terrorism or America's right to impose diktat on the world at large, congressmen turned their minds off and gave Bush a standing ovation, because they were just as stupid as he was. And they didn't have any excuse. Most of them went to the best universities. Today, the same Bush doctrine is sinking beneath the waves of growing portion of the punditocracy, declares that some forms of terrorism are better than others, and that harboring a terrorist may not be so bad if it advances U.S. interests, in other words, U.S. corporate interests and the military arms manufacturing. But once again, the response is not questioning, debate, or even applause, but silence. The latest evidence of a sea change in establishment thinking is a blog that Ahmad Rashid, a prominent Middle East correspondent, recently published on the New York Review of Books website entitled "Why We Need the Al-Qaeda," unquote. Seems like nothing changes, like it stays the same. It argues that Al-Qaeda and its Syrian affiliate, Al-Nusra, are evolving into a more moderate direction. In other words, they're not killing near as many people. In a growing contrast to its rival, the super-violent Islamic State. So why not use al-Nusra as a counterforce against both Bashar and al-Assad and ISIS? Because you don't understand shit about the Arab mind. That's why. The only mistake you've made is to stay over there at all. Those people are going to do their thing, and they're going to fight among each other. And the only thing that can hold those countries together was dictatorship types. I'm sorry. But as Rashid puts it, unlike ISIS, which demands absolute subjugation of the inhabitants of any territory it conquers, surrender or be executed, al-Nusra is cooperating with other anti-Assad groups and recently joined the Army of Conquest alliance of rebel militias in northern Syria. Moreover, in contrast to ISIS's largely international and non-Syrian fighting force, al-Nusra's fighters are almost wholly Syrian, making them both more reliable and more committed to Syria's future. That's an assumption you don't necessarily have to go with. Meanwhile, in interviews with Al Jazeera, and they're not to be trusted at all, al-Nusra leaders have vowed not to attack targets in the West. Sure. Promoting an ideology that might be called nationalist jihadism, rather than global jihad. Oh, sure. Do you believe that, boys and girls? Their vow is to make everybody Muslim or kill them in the world. That's what their religion tells you, these fanatic jihadists. In recent months, al-Nusra's leadership toned down the implementation of their own brutal version of Islamic law while putting on hold their own plans of building a caliphate. Yeah, put it off for a while until things get better for them. Thus, in other words, get out of the Middle East. Get out of the goddamn Middle East. But you're not going to. You're going to play it right down to the end of the wire. And these people, you've created perhaps millions of terrorists that are reacting against U.S. intervention. They're not going to be less terrorists. They're going to be more terrorists. And knocking Assad out of power is is another suicidal operation. Thus, according to Rashad's viewpoint, al-Nusra is cooperative, patriotic, to what I say, unthreatening to anyone other than Assad. Yeah, but once they get Assad, then what are they going to do? And in favor of a kinder, gentler form of Sharia as well. I can see the Pentagon influence CIA all over this. Yet Rashid argues that while Turkey and the Arab Gulf states recognize that change is afoot, the U.S. keeps its eye absolutely shut, resolutely shut. With 230,000 killed and 7.6 million people uprooted in Syria alone, how is that making things better? Why weren't things better when Assad ran the show and that was it? The Arab states want a quick end to the Assad regime and a viable solution for Syria. Well, what's that going to be? Anarchy? What's that going to be? A viable solution? Explain yourself, dipshit. They know that that solution will never come from the weak, moderate opposition, and that any lasting peace will require support by the strong and ruthless Islamic groups fighting there. Well, there's not going to be any peace until the United States backs off, until this monstrosity of psychopaths in Washington and the CIA and in the Pentagon back out of there. And then the Europeans will back out of there, but the Europeans have more interest there, really, than we do. So the Gulf states are backing the second most ruthless Islamic group in Syria, al-Qaeda's affiliate, in hopes of offsetting the first most ruthless, ISIS, and making short work of the Ba'athist regime in Damascus. Well, we saw what happened to a lot of the Ba'athists, given all the modern weapons, and they threw them down and ran for their lives. ISIS is still holding the cards because they're willing to use absolute, ruthless barbarity to gain what they want. People like that keep winning. They keep winning until they morph into something else. But as Arab leaders prepare for direct negotiations with al-Nusra, Rashid warns, quote, the only one not at the table could be the United States, unquote. Come on in, said the spider to the fly. You got 1 foot and one leg in now up to your ass. Come on, put your other leg back in here, up to your ass, in political quicksand. Quick political bog. This is dramatic stuff. After all, Rashid is not taking aim at some minor doctrine, but one that has been a cornerstone of U.S. foreign policy since 9/11. Moreover, he's not the only one talking his way. Since Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan flew to Riyadh in early March to meet with Saudi King Salman and discuss ways of upping support for the Syrian Islamist opposition, there has been a veritable boomlet in terms of calls for a rapprochement with al-Qaeda. Can you believe it? The same people who are killing young white Americans and other Americans that are sent over into these quagmires, now they want them to be our buddies again. They never were our buddies. They said they were our buddies back when they were helping fight the Russians in Afghanistan. I know quite a bit about that. Within days of the Riyadh get-together, Foreign Affairs went public with an article arguing that even though the United States is the closest it has ever been to destroying al-Qaeda, its interests would be better served by keeping the terrorist organization afloat, unquote. What fools we mortals be. Lina Khatib, director of the Carnegie Middle East Center in Beirut, wrote a few weeks later that while not everyone likes Nusra's ideology, there's a growing sense in the north of Syria that it is the best alternative on the ground. Says who? And that ideology is a small price to pay for higher returns. Says who? More U.S. troops. You wait and see. Charles Lister of the Brookings Institute's Doha Center wrote that al-Nusra is undergoing a moderating shift. Sure. Frederick Hoff, Obama's former envoy to the Syrian guerrillas, is now a senior fellow at the at the Atlantic Council in Washington. That means he's supposed to know something. Just another egghead that probably doesn't know shit from Shinola. Said the group has become a real magnet for young Syrian fighters. Are there any young Syrian fighters left? Aren't they all dead? I mean, aren't we deploying depleted uranium all over Syria too? Wherever they're firing U.S. weapons, they're spreading nuclear waste and birth defects and everything else. So where are they going to get all these young Syrian fighters after this present bunch are all killed off, who don't have any particular jihadist or even radical sectarian agenda? Well, people that don't have a particular jihadist or even radical sectarian agenda are not going to fight. They're going to be trying to save their ass, stay out of the way, hide in a basement or something. They are drawn to al-Nusra, he explains, for two reasons. Because it's well-resourced. Who says and where what resource? And because it seems to have been willing to fight the regime and not to engage in some of the corrupt activities and warlordism than you would find elsewhere within the panoply of Syrian opposition. This is all bullshit, boys and girls. I mean, the article, the people who wrote the article know what's going on, but the people they're quoting don't know shit from Shinola. So Rashid's views are hardly unique. Nevertheless, they're the most explicit and upfront to date, an indication that support for an alliance with al-Qaeda is on the upswing. We've come full circle, just like when I used to hunt rabbits. And that advocates are growing bolder and more self-confident. They will till they meet up with ISIS and they see guys getting their heads cut off. So how should ordinary people who are not part of the elite foreign policy discussion respond? Well, it's a waste of time to respond because they don't listen to you anyhow, these psychopath warmongers. I mean, you know, I've got somebody trying to call me. Wait a minute. Goddamn Paki or Afghanistan guy on a telephone trying to ask me, well, I heard you had lower back pain, trying to sell me some shit. I hung up on him. Wait a minute. Let's see. Where am I at? For one thing, they might notice that such articles are remarkably one-sided and poorly reasoned. Rashid may be one of Pakistan's most respected journalists. I think I was just talking to him, trying to sell me some shit. As the BBC puts it, someone whose work has appeared in such publications as the Daily Telegraph and the Far Eastern Economic Review. Oh boy, that means you're smart. Yet shooting holes through his argument is child's play. Take his claim that al-Nusra's leaders have toned down the implementation of their own brutal version of Islamic law, unquote. Whatever the difference between al-Nusra and ISIS on this score, it's less impressive than Rashid lets on. The writer of this article is pretty sharp. The Sofan Group, a New York-based security firm headed by the Lebanese-American, these are all the time, these creeps coming in here and getting American citizenship and all of a sudden become experts. Ex-FBI agent named Ali H. Sofan notes, for instance, that while Islamic State released a video in January showing its forces stoning an accused adulteress, al-Nusra released one around the same time showing its forces shooting two women for the same alleged offense. They know how to keep those women in line over there. But yet there's a lot of white European and American women marrying these assholes. Since the victims in either case were killed, the difference, as the Sofan group noted, was purely stylistic. Oh, isn't that a cute title for murder? Yazid claims that al-Nusra is less extreme in its hostility to Shiism, in part because it thinks anti-Shia fanaticism is backfiring and becoming an impediment to the gaining of more territory. Oh, God, this tires you out, man. Indeed, Abdul Muhammad al-Julani, al-Nusra's commander-in-chief, told Al Jazeera, another CIA front, in a rare interview on May 27th, that his forces were willing to welcome Alawites. Now, the Alawites, of course, are the Saudi Arabian bastards. And boy, believe me, they cannot be trusted, as Syria Shiites are known back into the fold. Quote, if they drop weapons, al-Jalani said, disavow Assad, do not send their men to fight for him and return to Islam. Then they are brothers, unquote. There you go, that stupid religion shit again. Return to Islam. Return also to the baby Jesus and everything will go right. But when he described Alawism as a sect that has moved outside the religion of God and Islam, insanity, man, is all insane. The meaning became clear. Alawite must either convert or die, because Muhammad said so. Whether this makes al-Nusra less genocidal than ISIS is open to debate. Well, they got to check with the daddy God, the Muslim guy, Muhammad. He talks to them in their sleep and tells them what to do. According to the pro-rebel Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, boy, that's a mouthful. What's human rights? Al-Nusra recently massacred more than 20 Druze villagers in northwestern Syria. Yeah, that's the moderates. Reportedly after a local commander denounced them as kufar or infidels. While al-Jalani, in his Al Jazeera interview, specified that Christians must pay the jizya, a special head tax imposed by Islamic law, as well as stipulation of Syria's 10% Christian minority is not likely to find very reassuring. Of course, American preachers are going absolutely spastic, saying, we got to save those Christians over there. Yeah, we got to save them, got to send them all the money. Millions of dollars are going out to so-called save these people. You can't save them. That mess over there, nobody can be saved. Unless they got lots and lots of money, they can come to New York or Miami Beach or L.A. and live pretty well. Ordinary people, I wonder what happens later on when they send secret agents out with scimitar swords to infiltrate San Francisco society and find these reprobate, fallen away Muslims and chop their heads off. That's probably going to happen too. Stay tuned for the new movie. Ordinary people viewing this from afar might notice that the government that al-Jalani is seeking to overthrow is officially secular and non-discriminatory, and that even Obama has conceded that it has protected the Christians in Syria. I don't give a shit whether they protect the Christians there. I don't care about any of these people. As he told a Syrian, one white Aryan young soldier is not worth the whole population over there. As he told a Syrian Christian delegation last September, they might also notice that Rashid's article, in other words, respects highly revealing, although it is not in ways that he cares to admit. Well, how do you know what he's not admitting? You read the mind, man? Did Muhammad help you read the mind? For instance, Rashid writes that the U.S. policy in the Middle East is beset by growing contradictions. No shit, Sherlock. That's all it is contradictions. This is obviously correct, but the problem is not that Washington refuses to face facts about al-Nusra's alleged moderating trend, but the U.S. is attempting to hammer out an accord with Iran while struggling to preserve its alliance with Israel and the Arab Gulf states, all of whom regard Iran as... You see how insane all this is? I'm not even going to read the rest of this article because I know you're out there pulling your hair out When is he going to quit reading this shit? Well, I'm just trying to show you the way it is. And a lot of that stuff's coming over here. It'll gradually get here. You got Islamics coming into this country by the thousands. And they're getting a U.S. citizenship, and then they're taking out their bullshit grievances on each other in here. Just like the Mexicans will. Just like the niggers do every day. But that's all right, because some of them loved baby Jesus. Yeah, we gotta help those people. Give them a place here in the United States. Even if we have to kick the ass of the white working class, get them out of the houses and put the Muslims in, because that's the way it's going to be. Oh, boy. Insane. Religion is 2/3 of the insanity of the planet. Now, here's something from the Ukraine, and I know a lot of right-wingers go gaga over Putin and want to volunteer to go over there and fight in eastern Ukraine, which is insanity. You got a war right here in Europe, in your country, in England, in the United States. You want to go fucking over there. Representative John Conyer, a nigger of Michigan, of course, a veteran of the civil rights movement, wrongs movement, and a longtime member of the Congressional Black Caucus. That and 50 cents might get you a cup of coffee. So on June 11th, they got some amendments passed. Quote, I'm grateful that the House unanimously passed my amendments last night to ensure that our military does not train members of the repulsive neo-Nazi Azov Battalion, along with my measures to keep the dangerous and easily trafficking manpads out of unstable regions, unquote. Conyers said in a statement to the website. Well, I agree with you, Mr. Nigger, but for a different reason. I don't want good Aryan white young men wasting themselves in this ongoing nonsense in eastern Ukraine. That's up to the Ukrainians to solve, or Ukrainians and the Russians, instead of going over there like nuts. The Ukrainian government immediately, you know, this is the same thing that happened in Rhodesia and South Africa. There was some numbnuts like Fatty Covington and some people like that went running down there to save the white race by killing the niggers in Angola. And of course, he ended up, I think, being a cook. Fatty Covington was a cook feeding the troops that were going out there killing the niggers. And several of these guys, and I met some of these guys that went into these foreign countries that think they're Nazis, but I don't think they even know what the Nazi National Socialism means, or at least not the kind that would gain any ground or footing in any society. It's going to take a peaceful evolution of National Socialism if you're going to use it. Of course, you'll have to use it under a different name, probably. The Ukrainian government immediately denounced Conyers. Anton Gerashenko, advisor to Kiev's interior minister, urged the U.S. intelligence agencies to pay attention to him. Now, why would they want to do that? The Ukrainian government should not be wanting U.S. and European soldiers of fortune being trained by the U.S. to fight his government. That don't even make sense. What the fuck is this? In a tragic irony, on the same day Conyers' amendments passed the House, a bloody attack in the eastern Ukrainian city of Kharkov confirmed the role of fascists in the misnamed New Democratic Ukraine championed by the Washington officials. Shit. You see, Washington will back alleged Nazis if they do their bidding. And like I say, I run into some of these people and expose them. The ones I ran into just don't get it, or they want to play Nazi or play soldier or something. On the night of June 11, a group of masked neo-Nazis, either you're a Nazi or you're not, masked right-wingers, is what they should call them, stormed a group of foreign students outside their dormitory, 5 Arab and 4 Nepali students, as well as 2 Russian speakers who came to their defense, were brutally attacked. The students were hospitalized, some with serious stab wounds and head injuries. Now, what does that have to do with saving the white race? Nothing! Go home, stupid! Fight in your own countries. Local media reported that the attackers were followers of Andrei Beletsky, a notorious white supremacist. Well, that's okay, but fight on your own terms on your own land. Don't drag other people in from other countries. Kharkov, who was jailed under the previous Ukrainian government for acts of fascist violence. I think I've seen some pictures of this guy or somebody like him, and he was just a common thug as far as I'm concerned. Like some of our skinheads that I used to have a lot of contact with, some of them just went off the reservation and just became violent thugs. I admit that. I couldn't control them. Beletsky was freed during the U.S.-backed coup in 2014, is now a leader of the Azov Battalion. Ukraine's Azov Battalion is a 1,000-man volunteur militia of the Ukrainian National Guard that the Foreign Policy magazine has characterized as openly Nazi and fascist. In other words, pro-corporate. Notes Representative Conger's website. Ukraine's Interior Minister Arsen Akhavov, who oversees the Ukraine's armed militias, announced that Azov's troops would be among the first units to be trained by the Pentagon in Operation Fearless Guardian, prompting significant international concern. You see what the United States government, group of gangsters and thugs do? They just fuck things up all over the world. And they use the right wing and the left to do it. And there are millions of people in this country who mouth the idea of supporting the white race, but who are often in these right-wing swamps following these idiotic leaders who are not really going to save or help the white race at all. Most cases down there in eastern Ukraine, there are white people killing white people, bombing men, women, and children on both sides, blowing up their houses. What has that got to do with saving the white race, or helping the white race, or doing something for the white race? That's all hurting the white race. Well, I'm telling you, this right wing has really fucked up everything, and it's being carefully guided, yes, guided by the psychopaths in Washington. Remember, David Duke worked with the CIA way back when I first met him, before I first met him. He worked for the CIA and his father. He was a big shot in Shell Oil. And he travels around Europe. Doesn't seem to have that much problem. And they mouth all the same thing. Everything, it's all the Jews. It's all the Jews, you know. You better start questioning a lot of these people on the right. If you don't, you're going to be a victim of them. You're going to be a victim of the right wing in this country. Listen to me. I'm telling you the truth. I'll be back tomorrow, Saturn's Day. And hope I'll have some more bad news for the system, which is good news for us.